So the reading's at page 745 if you've got a church Bible in front of you. Is not this the kind of fasting I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe him and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help, and he will say, "Here am I." If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath, and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honourable, and if you honour it by not going your own way and not doing as you please or speaking idle words, then you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land and to feast on the inheritance of your father Jacob. The mouth of the Lord has spoken.
Thank you, Bethan. We just invite Ernest, and I just give thanks for the offering and pray for Ernest as he comes to speak to us. But we just thank you for the good gifts that you've given to us. We thank you for the gift of how we can use our time and our finances. We thank you for all that is given this morning and through other means. We again just give thanks to you for this gift from the Lang Trust, and just pray that you'll just help us to take some of the requirements that they set seriously as a church. Help us to be challenged as to how we reach out to the community and beyond here. We thank you too for Ernest. We thank you for the many times that he's met with us here at Alma. We thank you for the way in which you've used him, and just pray that as he speaks to us now, that you'll bless him and you'll bless us. Through the power of your Spirit we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
With you again. My apologies about last week. Despite availing myself of the free flu vaccination that the NHS gives people of my age back in the autumn, I got that mutant strain that's around, and it was pretty nasty, but it's good to be with you. Now, one of the best known questions in the Bible is, who is my neighbour? Perhaps that's because in Luke's Gospel it's the introduction to one of the best-known parables of Jesus, the parable of the Good Samaritan. And the question is provoked by a summary of the Old Testament law which Jesus gives. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbour as yourself. In Mark's Gospel, this summary is given by Jesus in response to a scribe who asks him, which commandment is first of all? Well, that question was a matter of debate in the time of Jesus. The rabbis debated it. The debate is said to have been provoked by a Gentile who told a rabbi that he would be circumcised and become a Jew if the rabbi could summarize for him the demands of the law of Moses while he was standing on one leg. Obviously, the man didn't want to have a long list of regulations and rules to have to keep. Well, a lot of people don't realize that Jesus' answer consists of two quotations from the Old Testament. The first part is from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And this, Jesus says, is the first commandment. And the second, he says, that he gives is from Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18. You shall love your neighbour as yourself. And Jesus adds, there is no greater commandment than these. That gives great importance to that command to love our neighbour. So no wonder the scribe said to Jesus in Luke, "Well, who is my neighbour?" That too is a question that was being debated in Jesus' day. If you look back to Leviticus 19 and verse 18, it says, "You shall not bear a grudge against any of your people, but you shall love your neighbour as yourself. I am the Lord." This might seem to limit the neighbour to a fellow Israelite, because it starts about talking about not having a grudge against one of your people. And if that's so, then what Jesus says in the parable of the Good Samaritan goes beyond the Old Testament law. However, in fact, what he says is firmly grounded in the Old Testament. Not many verses later in Leviticus 19, in fact in verses 33 and 34, it says, "When an alien resides with you in your land, you shall not oppress the alien. The alien who resides with you shall be to you as a citizen among you. You shall love the alien as yourself." You shall love the alien as yourself. That makes clear that the neighbour is not limited to being a fellow Israelite. But there's a second important point. The command in Leviticus 19:18 ends with those words, "I am the Lord." This is a reminder that the laws in the Old Testament aren't just an arbitrary list of rules. They were given to Israel to teach her to reflect the nature of the God with whom she had a covenant relationship. Several times in the Old Testament, God makes clear to Israel that he has a concern for the alien, for the widow, for the orphan. Now, in their setting, those were the marginalized people, the powerless ones in society, the ones who didn't have land or money or a status in society and could easily be ignored or oppressed or abused. So God says, for example, in Exodus 22:21, "You shall not wrong or oppress the resident alien, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You shall not abuse the widow and the orphan. If you abuse them, when they cry out to me, I will surely heed their cry. My wrath will burn." An even more comprehensive list of those God's concerned about is given in that passage that we've just had read to us from Isaiah 58. Just let me remind you a part of it, verses 6 to 8. "Is not this the feast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and to bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin? Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard." So God says here he's concerned about suffering due to injustice, oppression. He's concerned about the hungry, the homeless, the poor, the naked. And Israel is commanded to take action to meet the needs of these people. The concept of the neighbour as being anyone in need, which is encapsulated in that parable of the Good Samaritan, is there in the Old Testament. It reflects the character, the nature, the concerns of God. What does that have to say to us today? How can we show concern for our needy neighbour? Well, before trying to answer that question, I want to make two preliminary points. First, some people rightly point out that there's very little direct teaching in the New Testament about what we might call social issues. This short series you're having, interestingly, is going from the Old Testament. Some wrongly conclude that because it's not there in the New Testament, Christians and the church shouldn't get involved in these kind of issues. Well, that's a wrong conclusion, because it ignores the fact that the Old Testament was the Bible of the early church. When they needed guidance on social issues, it was there in the Old Testament, their Bible, because it contained the laws of a community life in a nation that lived in a covenant relationship with God. That teaching didn't need to be repeated, it needed to be applied. And that leads to the second point. The laws in the Old Testament are the laws of an ancient Near Eastern theocratic state which had a subsistence agriculture as its economic base. We live in a modern, Western, secular, industrial, technological society with a very different economic base. We can't just take laws from the Old Testament and social teaching from the Old Testament and apply them in a simplistic way in our society. We have to think about the principles behind the laws and the teaching that we have in the Old Testament, and then thoughtfully and prayerfully work out how to apply them appropriately in our society. Well, to begin with, let's recognise that in the UK, we have, for example, an education system, a health service, a social security system, and many social laws which still owe a great deal to the efforts of churches and the Christian social reformers down through the ages, particularly in the 19th and early 20th century. This is a heritage that we've got and that we ought to seek to preserve and to develop and to meet the needs of today. Things have changed since the late 19th century or the early part of the 20th century in certain aspects in our society. And this can be done by individuals getting involved in the systems as teachers, doctors, nurses, social workers, industrialists, politicians, both locally and nationally. And not just doing a good day-to-day job, which we should do as Christians, but getting involved in the bigger issues of whatever profession that we've got involved with. You just heard the example of John Lang, who, as an industrialist, made some real influence in bringing in a more Christian way of acting as an industrialist and looking after your workforce. Well, as teachers can get involved in education policy, doctors can get involved in health policy, politicians can get involved in local issues and national issues and so on. This is one way to take concern for our needy neighbour by affecting the overall shape, if you like, and character of our society. But we also need to think about how, as individuals and churches, we can take action at the local level to meet the needs of needy neighbours. And to their credit, many churches are doing good and effective work in various ways. I was pleased and encouraged to hear about the soup run here in Bristol. For about 10 years, I was chair of the City Centre Ministry Committee in Bristol, which oversaw the work of the City Centre chaplain in the Broadmead Centre. And that was where I first learnt about the work of the soup run. It's great to know it is still continuing, and churches are supporting it. We live across the bridge, as you heard, and our nearest little town is Caldicot, and the churches there do something similar. It's not quite the same. It's not a big city. But at weekends, there's a van that parks in the city centre and provides tea and coffee and biscuits and cakes to meet the needs of the people around there. Now, in that case, it's not, there are some homeless people, but it's much more kids in gangs running around, and they minister to them. When I was chair of the City Centre Ministry Committee here in Bristol, the chaplain did tremendous work with individuals in working in the shops and the businesses, and I know individuals who came through faith through his work, but he also affected policy in that centre. There's a committee that runs the centre, which involves the city and investors and the big stores that are involved there. And at one point, they were very concerned about begging, the beggars in the Broadmead Centre. I think the general policy the police would have liked would have been to arrest them all. But the chaplain was the person who said, now hold on a moment. Yes, some of those beggars are frauds. Some of them are genuinely needy people. Some of them want to get out of their situation. And he talked some of the big national stores in the Broadmead Centre to offer work experience to any of the beggars who were prepared to take on a six-week work experience programme with them. Some of them did. As a result of it, some of them got full-time jobs in the stores in which they'd done their work experience. It's possible to change policies like that. In Newport, our nearest big city where we live, throughout this winter, it's been done for a number of years now, the churches in Newport take responsibility to provide a night shelter throughout the winter. It goes round the churches. So every night there is a church open to provide night shelter for the homeless people of Newport. Also Newport, there's the Raven House Trust. Again, I know this sort of thing exists in other places, which provides clothing, furniture, children's toys, and now a food bank for the needy people in the Newport area. I know there are similar things, as I said, in Bristol and in other places. Then there's the whole street pastors movement, which I'm sure you're probably aware of. One of my former students, when I was a tutor at the Baptist College here in Bristol, went to a church on the west side of Birmingham, and with two or three other churches, they decided they would train up street pastors, and certain nights of the week they would be out there as street pastors. They went to talk to the local police, and as he put it to me, frankly, the first time they went to the police were pretty sniffy about it. They didn't quite see what this could do. But after a few weeks, he went to talk to the police, and they said, "This is great. The nights when you're on the streets, there are far, far fewer arrests and cautions for petty crimes and for disorderly behaviour. You've changed the atmosphere on those nights when you're out there on the streets." And the community is very grateful for that. Well, you're already involved in the soup run. Are there other ways, as individuals or as a church, where you could get involved in activities like this to build community, to improve community here in Bristol? Well, we've been thinking so far about what I've called the needy neighbour. But there's another aspect of Old Testament teaching with regard to loving your neighbour as yourself that's equally important. This is what I would call love for your near neighbour. Depending on where you live, you may have to go and look for some needy neighbours, but there are neighbours all around you, those who are next door to you, those down your street. Teaching about being neighbourly to them is one of the themes of the book of Proverbs. It's an interesting fact that in the Old Testament, the commonest word for neighbour, reach, is also the normal word for friend. The context has to guide to the meaning. When the context seems to stress the emotional attachment, it's usually translated into English as friend. When the stress is on the geographical nearness, it's translated as neighbour. Sometimes it's hard to decide which. I think it's clearly making the point that the basic attitude we should have to our neighbours is that we should be friends. It should be one of friendliness to our neighbours. Now, Proverbs is a very down-to-earth, realistic book. The sages of Israel were well aware of what nowadays is sometimes called the neighbour from hell. So, Proverbs 21, verse 10, "The souls of the wicked desire evil. Their neighbours find no mercy in their eyes." Or again, Proverbs 11, 9, "With their mouths the godless would destroy their neighbours." The godly person, of course, is not to be like that. "Do not be a witness against your neighbour without cause. Do not deceive with your lips. Do not say, 'I will do to others as they've done to me. I will pay them back for what they have done.'" Proverbs 24, 28 to 29. "Or do not plan harm against your neighbour who lives trustingly beside you." Proverbs 3, 29. The importance in God's eyes of being a good neighbour is, of course, made clear by the fact that the last two of the Ten Commandments are about being a good neighbour. It's about not being a false witness against your neighbour, not coveting the things that your neighbour has. Thankfully, I've never had a neighbour from hell. But occasionally, we've had difficult neighbours. What do you do then? Well, clearly you don't retaliate. Proverbs tells us that. You don't plan harm against them. You don't try to seek to get your own back. You seek to build a relationship of trust and of friendliness to promote harmony. We had some neighbours who moved in. Nice people, but they had noisy and poorly controlled dogs. Big ones. They ran up and down the street, made a lot of noise. They intimidated some of the older residents. And people started complaining. People started talking about reporting them to the police. And because we happened to live next door to the neighbours with the dogs, they seemed to think we ought to do something about it.
Well, we said, hold on a moment. Let's not go straight to the police. Let's talk to them, these new neighbours. Let's get to know them. And talk to them about their dogs and controlling them. And so we did. It took a little while, but eventually they improved their fencing. They got better gates in front of their house, and things calmed down. The dogs are sometimes still noisy. You can't stop dogs being noisy, but this whole situation settled down, and we are living in harmony. Most neighbours aren't evil, but some neighbours are thoughtless. The sages of Israel knew that too. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbour's house, otherwise the neighbour will become weary of you and hate you. Well, take that on board. Whoever blesses a neighbour with a loud voice rising early in the morning will be counted as cursing. Proverbs 27:14. Those like me who aren't really awake before 10 o'clock appreciate that one. One neighbour thought it would be a good idea to mow her lawn in the morning before she went to work. The trouble was that meant doing it before 7 a.m. After doing it a couple of times, she realised it didn't promote good neighbourliness, and she stopped. We've seen that being a good neighbour means being someone who your neighbours can trust, living trustingly with you. It also means ready to give help when needed. Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is your power to do it. Do not say to your neighbour, go and come again tomorrow, I'll give it to you, when you have it with you. Proverbs 3:27-28. Better is a neighbour who is nearby than kindred who are far away. Proverbs 27:10. Can we be neighbours who in one sense are better than family to those who live around us when they are in need? Of course, the reverse of this is showing your neighbours that you trust them by being willing to go and ask them for help when you are in need. An aspect of being trustworthy, of course, is to show respect for your neighbour's property and belongings. A number of times in the Old Testament you get a law like this one from Deuteronomy 19:14. You must not move your neighbour's boundary marker set up by former generations on the property that will be allotted to you in the land your Lord, your God, is giving you to possess. Well, you may not contemplate moving a neighbour's fence or wall, but do you trespass on their property without their knowledge, without their permission, without their consent? Or do you respect their property? And the Old Testament contains a number of laws about taking good care of your neighbour's property. For example, Israelites were told to take full responsibility for anything they borrowed from their neighbours. When someone borrows an animal from another and it is injured or dies, the owner not being present, full restitution shall be made. Exodus 22:14. I suppose the modern equivalent will be borrowing your neighbour's lawnmower or electric drill or something like that. But concern for a neighbour's property shouldn't be limited to when it's in your care. So in Deuteronomy 22:1-4, we read, you shall not watch your neighbour's ox or sheep straying away and ignore them. You shall take them back to their owner. If the owner does not reside near you, or you do not know who the owner is, you shall bring it to your own house, and it shall remain with you until the owner claims it. Then you shall return it. You shall do the same with your neighbour's donkey. You shall do the same with your neighbour's garment. You shall do the same with anything else that your neighbour loses and you find. You may not withhold your help. You shall not see your neighbour's donkey or ox fall on the road and ignore it. You shall help to lift it up. Well, it doesn't only apply to pets nowadays, but it's saying anything that your neighbour has, any of their belongings, you should feel that you're responsible that those things are kept safe. Perhaps a modern application of this would be to join and take an active part in the local neighbourhood watch scheme, if there is one in your area. Of course, we should seek to love our neighbour as ourselves just because it's a good and a right thing to do. It reflects the character of our God. But in doing so, it is, of course, an ongoing witness to God, an ongoing witness for Christ. We'll be acting as lights in the world, in the way we should be. We'll be acting as agents of God's love to those who are around us, whether it's the needy neighbour or the near neighbour. People will be drawn closer to God through it, even if it takes time for this to happen. And it might happen in quite small ways. I mentioned those neighbours with the dogs. They not only had dogs, they had cats. They'd never shown any interest in talking about spiritual things, but one day one of their cats went missing. Quite out of the blue, they asked us to pray that it would be found. Of course, we said we would. In God's grace, within a few days, the cat was found. Maybe that was God beginning to draw them closer to himself in a small way. Good neighbourliness builds communities. Love for the needy neighbour heals wounds and strengthens communities. And I want to end with a couple of examples of individuals and churches taking an initiative to promote good relationships and strengthen the community of which they're part. You may have heard of the Big Lunch movement. I don't know whether that's you come across that. It's something that a number of churches have been doing to hold a lunch for their community. Well, in one of our local villages in South East Wales, some Christians decided it would be good to do that, but not to do it, if you like, just a specific church event, because they felt that would turn some people off, in fact. So they went to talk to their community council and said, can we organise a big lunch for the whole village? Of course, many of the people who organised it and got involved were, in fact, people from the church in the village. But it was a whole community event, and it has happened two or three times now. It has been a way of building community in a village where increasingly a number of the people living there are, we might call it, just there in the dormitory, because they live in that village because they could commute from it to Bristol, to Cardiff, to Gloucester and so on, and they don't really meet their neighbours. But that big lunch has been a way of bringing the community together. We go, as well as helping our local very small chapel in the village we live in, we go on Sunday mornings when I'm not away preaching to Magor Baptist Church. And Magor decided he wanted to show some ways of, well, showing their thankfulness to the community and blessing the community in which they are. And they thought, well, one way of doing that was, what, the church is on the edge of Magor Square. And in Magor Square, there's a number of businesses, shops and other businesses. And they said, we want to bless the businesses in our small town, as it now was. It used to be a village, but small town, thanks to the Second Severn Crossing. And in fact, they did an inventory and found there were about 40 small businesses in Magor. So the church decided that they would bake a big cake, one for each of those businesses. Church members, 40 church members agreed to do this. They didn't have to be experts in baking. They could buy a cake mix and make it from that. And then on Maundy Thursday last year, that on Maundy Thursday, these cakes put in special boxes with a message from the church saying, we in the church want to thank you for what you give to our community. We want to bless you for that. Here is a token of thankfulness from the church. So on Maundy Thursday, each business had one or two members from the church go in and say, we want to give you this. There was an amazing response from some of the businesses. They'd never really had anyone recognise and thank them for what they give to the community. And it has changed the attitude, some of them, towards the church. And we'll be doing the same this Maundy Thursday. Well, love your neighbour as yourself. Love your needy neighbour as yourself. Love your near neighbour as yourself. May God help us to see how we can do that and do it better than we have before, so as to get our communities working and working better where we live.